This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Hey everyone, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. I've been needing a quick getaway with my family, and the 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe is the perfect vehicle to take us there. It has standard third row seating, so I'm able to pack my entire family, plus pets in the car, while also having enough room for our camping essentials. Available H-Track all-wheel drive will get us through any dirt trails, and available dual wireless charging pads will ensure we never have to worry about getting stuck with a dead phone in the middle of nowhere. Visit HyundaiUSA.com. or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is Kelly Henderson, and you are listening to the Velvet's Edge podcast. My guest this week is Mee McCormick. According to her bio, Mee is a real food maven, a community food advocate, a restaurateur, a rancher, a mother, and the author of two books, My Kitchen Cure and My Pinewood Kitchen, about healing your body with food. I was turned on to her restaurant, Pinewood Kitchen, by my client, Dirk Bentley, who's an investor in Pinewood Eats. It is the perfect place for me because all food allergies are accommodated for, including mine of gluten-free and dairy-free, all mixed into some Southern home cooking. Not to mention that Mee is just one of the coolest women, and I love her story and journey of fighting her own intestinal disease that almost killed her and healing her body with food. Seriously, if you can, you should buy her cookbook. After tasting the food at Pinewood, I got it the second I heard it was full of her recipes. I've literally already planned out my menu for next week. Here's our conversation. Okay, so I was telling you before this that I've been reading your book and cookbook, My Pinewood Kitchen, all week, and it's so incredibly fascinating to me. Like we were talking, I totally geek out on using food to heal our bodies, and so do you. So you essentially learned to cook in order to heal yours, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was dying. I weighed 80 pounds, couldn't eat food or drink water, and I became a chef to save my life.
You couldn't even drink water?
No, I had an ulceration, the total circumference of my small intestine.
Wow.
And I couldn't, it was so, when you have an ulcer like that, nothing, the intestines are so swollen shut that nothing can go by them without causing tons of pain. It's like a big gaping wound. And when it's the total circumference, it means it can rupture at any time and kill you.
So were you even able to function at all?
I have no idea how I functioned as long as I did. I mean, I had two babies, a big life. I've led a very big life, and I have no idea. My mind is stronger than my body, and I do believe the body follows the mind.
Yeah. Well, let's take it back a little bit because I love that you just mentioned your big life, and I totally related to all of that. That talk about your life at that point, but I want to talk a little bit about your childhood first because your issues with food sort of started then, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was born with an intussusception, meaning the intestines collapse inside of themselves. And so the day I was born, I'm someone that, what the day I was born, they were like, she's going to die.
Wow.
So actually my grandfather introduced me most of my life as the one that almost died. And I never really got what that meant, but I think it gave me freedom, and that's why I'm so kooky. Because it's like, hey, I'm not really supposed to be here. I can do whatever I want. But I've always known that my time was borrowed. So yes, but then once I got sick when I was older, so I had a major surgery at birth. I was one of the first infants to survive that surgery. My mother had Crohn's disease in the 80s, and I watched her live a very, very painful life and then die when I was a teenager. I healed from the surgery at birth, but I had a lot of food allergies, dairy, now we know celiac, and other things. But I was born in the northern Appalachian Mountains, and my mother was a single mother, and when she was well, she worked as much as she could, and when she was sick and hospitalized, we starved. And so I was raised as what I like to say is fish sticks and food stamps. And so there was no silver spoon. There was actually an empty spoon in my mouth most of my life.
Which is what probably drove you to want a really big life later, right?
Well, then I think once everybody died, what people don't know about me is that then when I was just on the verge of 18, my mother was did not die of Crohn's disease. She was killed in a car accident. And then a week later, my two best friends were killed in another car accident.
Oh my God.
And then 3 days later, my grandmother died. So I was alone in the world. And I always knew that our time was quick and fleeting. And so for me, it's always been getting after having a big life, which does not equate big stuff. It means big living.
Tell us more what you mean by that. Like, what did you do after these deaths happened and you felt alone?
Well,
where were you going?
Well, I'm half Latin, so, and raised very Catholic. So the first place I went was a convent, and that did not work out. then from there, I lived with an aunt and uncle in D.C., and they were super bohemian people, and they didn't have children, and they gave me a space to get on my feet. And then I, like most people, I wanted to be super normal.
Yeah.
I had all this heartbreak, so all I wanted to do was mask it in some form of normalcy. And I went to the University of Maryland. And then I moved to New York City, and then I lived in Los Angeles, and then I lived in Tel Aviv, in and out of Tel Aviv for 6 years, Israel, and then Mexico City. And I always was someone that said yes.
Yeah.
I am that person. I'm like, okay. I mean, I wanted to be Margaret Mead when I was 14, and I was big into anthropology at 14. And then I always thought in college, had everyone not died, would I have finished school and gone to the Peace Corps?
Yeah.
But I guess my Peace Corps in my Aboriginal study is on my farm in Pinewood.
I loved reading, though, because now we know, obviously, you're in Pinewood, but I loved reading that you were working in Hollywood as an assistant stylist. And you've done so many different things. You were a writer. I mean, what did you ever think your path would end you up in Pinewood, Tennessee?
No, I mean, that's the thing. I was living in Hollywood. I left New York City. The plan was to go to FIT. And then for the summer, I left Maryland. A job opened up for me in Los Angeles to be an assistant stylist to one of the largest television commercial stylists. And so I took it, not even really knowing what that would look like. And I loved it. I love the story of us as humans. So I loved the director sitting with us and telling us this is, you know, they're middle class. This is the income they make. This is the house they live in. It's a Goldsmith, it's this commercial.
Yeah.
And I loved doing the hunting and the gathering. And I've always been someone who can put something together with whatever I've got. And so I turned out to be pretty good as only an assistant stylist. But, you know, for me, I'm also, again, back to living a big life. I've always believed and still do that where I'm at is where I have arrived. So I had arrived. I worked as a bartender at night, and my goal was really to be a writer. Then I became a writer for hire, writing treatments and different pilots. And when someone would option the rights to books for people. So I had a little writing gigs on the side and bartending and assistant styling. And I mean, in truth, I thought I had made it.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I'm a come up. So the fact that I had my own car in a great apartment next to the Grove, I was killing it. Okay.
I was thinking that, though, because coming from where you came and then to live in LA and do all these things, I mean, I'm sure that felt so glamorous. So I guess my question is how do you then go from that to Pinewood, Tennessee, population 200?
Well, I mean, really insane. I mean, I met my husband and I was like, no, I mean, he lived in, and he's here, he would laugh at me, but he lived in Pinewood on this ranch, this big cattle ranch. And, you know, he was like, I've got women crawling for barbed wire fences to get to me. And I was like, open the gate, homie, I'm good, you know, but let him in. You're not it. I mean, when you come from, you know, backcountry coal mines, I mean, my grandmother did the makeup. Half my family were undertakers, the other half coal mines and steel mills. Wow. And my grandma did, I grew up with my grandmother doing the makeup on the bodies.
Wow.
And so, and Barry Manilow on the record player. I just didn't want to go back.
Yeah.
You know, I viewed Pinewood as going backwards, and I viewed, like most people, that we have to go to big places to do big things. And again, life has shown me that Pinewood is the smallest place I've ever lived. And that's saying something. And it's the biggest thing I've ever done.
Mm. I love that. I love that because the mentality of just chasing the big dreams, and it has to be in these big places, and all the while it was right in front of you, or it was back in, you know, maybe the way you did grow up or in a similar situation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's absolutely all the things. And I think, you know, having lived in Los Angeles and New York City and in places like Tel Aviv and Mexico City, which is a whole nother part of the journey, what we value, you know, I think we come to these places in our lives, and I do it on the regular now. And I ask myself, what do I value and what is my value?
Mm-hmm.
And because I've always asked myself that, I guess that's why I ended up in Pinewood, because it is a place where my personal values and value is rewarded.
Mm. So you finally moved to Pinewood. Were you sick the entire time you were in LA? Because that sounds like a pretty strenuous work schedule. How are you functioning?
I just lived on paste. I mean, we form relationships with our discomfort, whatever mm-hmm. that is, emotional, physical, relationship. We work that shit out.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're like, we're in it, homie. So I live with it. I live with this chronic burn in my intestines and in my stomach. And I lived in LA, and I was 110 pounds at that time, so nobody noticed.
Well, it kind of works there, though.
It was in the sickest way.
Yeah.
It worked. And I was, you know, I wasn't starving to death, but I, you know, you only went out to dinner. You go out to dinner, you don't even eat in LA anyway.
Right.
And so I was just basically living within this cycle of I would eat, then I would feel bad, and then I wouldn't eat, and then I would be starving, and then I would have moments in the day where I didn't have pain, and those are the days that I would just kill it. I was just like doing all the things.
Mm.
And you form this really bizarre relationship with digestive discomfort, which is common in this country with people with acid reflux, IBS, constipation, chronic shadoobies, all the things that we just go, well, that's just my stomach. And it's
yeah.
not, because our stomachs and our digestive tracts were not created to malfunction. They were created to function.
So when you moved to Pinewood, were you already eating in a different way, or did that come when
no,
you made the move?
No, well, we didn't move full time back to Pinewood. My husband partnered actually with Fred Siegel in Los Angeles, and we lived in Malibu. What people don't know all the ways that we lived between Malibu and Pinewood for about 13 years.
Oh, wow.
And in between that, we have a house outside of Mexico City at the foot of the pyramids in Teotihuacan. And then we also lived full time for a little while in Sayulita on the beach. So my husband and I are very adventurous,
yeah.
you know, the big life.
Yeah.
For me, it was like, you can either have this gigantic house or you can have all these adventures.
Yeah.
So, so we were living, you know, the whole time I would say for the first 6 years of our marriage, we lived like that. And I lived on water and in and out of the hospital because that ulceration was growing and it was causing partial bowel obstructions. And I would end up hospitalized, just deathly ill.
Oh my
so
God.
We lived, I mean, then my illness and my discomfort became a part of my husband's discomfort. So not only now did I have the relationship with not feeling well, he had a relationship with me not feeling well. Isn't
right.
that interesting?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't see how he couldn't be affected, though, especially if you're having to go to the hospital and it's crippling what you were going through.
And they couldn't figure out that it was an ulceration. And
yeah.
they didn't know that I, on top of it, then had celiac. And I had two little girls. So it was just brutal. And then how I learned to cook is at this point now I'm 89 pounds. It's no longer even attractive in LA.
Yeah.
People are probably listening to this and thinking I'm making slights on eating disorders, which I'm not, because one of the things I do own is also eating disorder programs. Which yeah. I have a sense of humor about it. So, but then we came to, I was super sick now. I mean, I was on the floor in Mexico in the mouth of the jungle, and I'd had a bowel obstruction, and nobody found me for 3 days, and my husband was in the United States, and I had 2 babies, and that's when we knew there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And I went back to Los Angeles. I went through every test in the world. They found the ulceration, and then we said, okay, we have to move back. Mm-hmm. And then I started apprenticing. I completely and totally 100% believe that if we listen, we can receive information that will guide us. And I heard a voice that said, what's in it? And I had all these drugs lined up because the doctors thought I either had small intestinal cancer or I had Crohn's disease. But couldn't have the last biopsy to determine which one it was, because of the way the ulcer was, it would cause my intestines to rupture and possibly kill me. So I passed on the test. And I went home and I got very quiet, and I heard a voice, and that voice is the inside voice that said, what's in it? And I applied that voice to not what's first in the drugs that were in front of me that I knew I couldn't even swallow, because I couldn't swallow water. Then the next thought was, what's in the food? And we were just major cattle ranchers and we weren't growing produce yet. And I thought, okay, what's in the food? And this is 12 years ago, 10 years ago. No one was talking about what was in the food yet. There were no books on healing your body with food. There were no maps. So I began to apprentice with a woman who was a macrobiotic food counselor for digestive health out of the Shaw Wellness Center in Spain. And that's where I started to cook. And I was the worst cook you have ever met in your entire, like nasty girl.
That's hard for me to believe now, because I've had your food and it's amazing. So you were terrible. I mean, that's actually encouraging to me, because I'm like, damn, how do I learn how to cook like this?
Horrible. Like a can of green beans and a jar of salsa and one fork and one pot. I mean, I really did shop via the pretty pictures on the boxes of the frozen food. I was like, those drumsticks are gorgeous. Yeah. Put it in the cart. So I get it. That's where I started in macrobiotics. And I'm a sponge. I have a sponge of a mind. I can memorize anything and everything. I mean, I now speak Hebrew and Spanish because of my travels. And had I had a different childhood, I probably would have become a scientist.
Yeah.
Or a doctor. But I wasn't supposed to be that. So I then learned all I could about macrobiotics, which is a great place to start because it's all the whole foods. So soaking your grains, soaking your legumes, using sea vegetables, using fermented foods, using miso paste. That was major. And within a month, I was starting to sit down at the table to eat, which was huge. Within 6 months, I was eating full plates of food, probably even sooner. But there was always this voice inside of me that, again, applies to the big life. A big life just means a big point of view. And I knew that there had to be a bigger point of view, that macrobiotics could not be the only way. And there had to be many ways to wellness. Luckily, I've been blessed by having an adopted mother named Dr. Joan Borncinko, and she has 3 PhDs from Harvard Medical School and cellular cancer biology. And when I got very sick, I called her and I said, what do I do? And she said, change your food now. So I've been spoiled in receiving tons of information from her, and then through another more networks of scientists that I've connected to through her, the latest food science. So the first studies on the microbiome weren't released until 2002, but by 2017, there's been 10,000. And now to date in the last 3 years, there are thousands coming out each month. So when I was doing this, there wasn't a lot of science, but the science that did exist was coming to me, and I was super blessed to have access to that and to have access to Joan and then to Dr. Carolyn Ross, who worked with Dr. Andrew Wild. And she would come every month and she would check on me and I would cook and they would both fly to see me and eat my food and they watched me get well. So I've just been super lucky.
So when you say get well, what does that look like now? I mean, did food completely heal your body? Are you able to function fairly normally?
Oh, yeah. I mean, now I'm a whopping like 128, 130, feeling good about myself, girl. and feeling good about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that means I can eat.
Means you're healthy. Yeah.
And I'm eating. It looks like I get up every day and I eat and I cook. So then from there, I went to culinary school in Los Angeles because I needed a bigger way, a bigger point of view. And I went in as a spy. And I went in as a spy for French and American classics because I really wanted to know what it is in our food that we crave and how do I do that? Mm. And, you know, traditional culinary school does not believe that you can use quinoa flour to make something super classic. So I had to kind of be a spy, which I went to their school, so I should learn from them, right? I should be quiet. And I took every bit of it, but I was allergic to all of it. So I would go home and recreate the recipes. And then I wrote a book called My Kitchen Cure, which was just because I knew I had to tell the world there had to be a million me's out there. And that book ended up selling like 20,000 copies all on my own. And then I became a chef on a show called The Better Show in New York. And then that was another blessing for me because it showed me that I wasn't alone, that there were millions of me wanting to change our food. And then that led me to Pinewood and becoming a chef there. But what does wellness look like now? It looks like I work 7 days a week. I'm joyful. I don't suffer. Every once in a while I do because I did find out I have celiac. And so if I eat out, I usually get sick. I don't eat out almost never, which is a bummer because a lot of people interview me and say, who's your chef inspiration or where's your favorite restaurant? And I go, Pinewood?
Yeah.
You're like, Pinewood? So wellness looks like, you know, I'm here. I'm really in the room. And I don't apologize for that. I think healing my intestines, which is the root of our existence, right? In Chinese medicine, it's the root of our being. It's the basic of our wellness. And that means for me, it's been a journey of discovering the self, my emotional self, my spiritual self, and my well self. So when I show up in the room, it's like, game on, girl. You're getting the real deal. Real deal.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global. Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I love that you did so much research before, and then I'm because when I hear that, I think, oh, well, she's super qualified to own her own restaurant, be a chef. But the way you describe it in the book is that when your husband came to you and was like, I bought Pinewood, I bought this place, and you were like, no, like, I can't do that. There's no way. It's that constant critic in our head. I thought that was so interesting that was your first reaction.
Oh, I was pissed. I was like, oh, hell no, you did not. Are you out of your mind? First of all, it was, do you know how much work that is?
Yeah.
It was, second of all, am I physically well enough?
Right.
It was, third, am I even capable? Am I smart enough? I mean, can I lead people? And then forget the fact that it's backcountry, middle of nowhere, going to become my somewhere.
Right.
I mean, it's not like I opened up in New York or LA or Nashville where there might be people, you know, really interested in what I'm doing. It was just the scariest one of this. I think having children and deciding to become a mother and having Pinewood are the two of the scariest things I've ever done in my life.
Well, it's kind of like another baby.
Oh, it's the biggest baby.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's investment, you know, but it has changed me. It has been a huge part of my wellness because it has put me into service. And when we're serving other people, we're in the most generous place of abundance we can be. And it's made me a really much, much better human being.
Yeah. I read a lot of that voice in this book. It was a lot about, I need to just pause. Let me listen to the universe or the higher power or whatever you want to call it and say, where am I supposed to be serving? Where am I supposed to be, like, letting go of the outcome and just opening yourself up to what the experience could be?
Yeah, because our expectations jack us up every day.
Yeah.
I mean, I really try to wake up every day and lower my expectations.
Yeah.
I do. I'm like, okay, wait. Or like if I have a project or I have a plan and I go, this is what it's going to look like. I really try not to. Like, it's a fine balance of dreaming into reality what you want to create. And it's another dance within allowing it to unfold as it's meant to be for you.
Yeah.
And so it's a whole lot of getting out of your own way.
Yeah.
And when I was really sick, my grandfather, going back to my Catholic upbringing as a child, and now I'm just so big, even in my spiritual thinking is expanded like my food has. I crawled on my knees to the basilica with him. And one of the things you do is you bow down as low as you can and you crawl on your knees in Mexico City. And I crawled and my grandfather looked at me and he said, do not ask her to heal you, meaning Guadalupe. You ask her for a road to find your own wellness. And so I really come from that work ethic of what is your part in this?
Yeah.
And what are you going to do? And I said, and I prayed in that moment, if you help me find a way to wellness, I'll serve. So I have shown up in many places knowing it's my service. And Pinewood is a massive part of my serving journey, majorly. And I don't know where else I'm going, but I'll go there if the road unfolds, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, that is true. And everything else you say about Pinewood, it's you're creating this food, this different kind of perspective for people with food. But so much goes into that I don't think people realize how difficult it is to keep your restaurant clean of the gluten or to watch all of these allergies and to keep everything organic. It's expensive. So what does that look like in comparison to other restaurants that we might be used to?
Well, first of all, we grow all the food.
Okay.
And we raise the livestock. So my other job is managing the farm. So I manage the farm and my team on the farm and my husband oversees all the cattle, but I run the office. So, planting the seeds, nurturing the seeds, picking the bugs to keep it biodynamic, organic, off of the plants, harvesting them, and then bringing it all into the restaurant means I can't waste anything. Mm-hmm. I can't waste a carrot because that carrot actually cost me way more than anybody else spent on a carrot.
Yeah.
And then from there, it's motivating my staff to stay invested. And so almost everybody in Pinewood in the kitchen helps out in the fields. We also raise our own bees and we raise our own mushrooms. So keeping them attached to the farm helps keep the relationship with the food as it comes into the kitchen. But I keep the kitchen open. So it's a 1920s general store and gas station, and the kitchen is in the middle of the room. And the reason I did that is I really wanted my team to have a relationship with the customer. I wanted them to see me in the faces of them. And I wanted, every time they prepared food, I wanted them to have that level of empathy and thoughtfulness with each dish. And that's how you keep your kitchen managed, is you create a relationship, a why behind the food and a why behind the way you do it. And it's a game changer. It's a culture that you're building. And I did not know I was going to be leading a movement of kindness and of thoughtfulness and inclusivity.
Yeah, you say that you feel like the energy of kindness goes into your cooking like another ingredient.
100%. Like if I'm crabby, I'm going to make the nastiest food.
Really? You noticed?
Yeah, my food is a little edgy. Oh, yeah. I'm always like, this is some shitty soup. for sure, you know, like my energy, or if I'm rushed and I'm not focused, it's not going to be as good. Yeah. But if I'm joyful and I'm relaxed, then it is going to be so good you cannot stand it. And that's what is in there. And I feel like I set that energy in that little kitchen. I walk in the door, and no matter what's going on with me, the second I walk in the door, the first place I go is behind the line and check in with my team. Mm. Then I move out to the floor. So, yeah, I mean, that's the deliciousness in food, is love.
I love, too, that you said one of the fears you had about actually being the chef was that you had experienced other chefs or cooks or anyone that worked in a kitchen at a restaurant as kind of aggressive and hard. And you were like, that's not me. Like, I could never lead that way. So
it's like you're eating. Usually when you go out to eat in a restaurant, you're eating in a highly anxious food.
Right.
There is a ticket there. First of all, from the moment that food is ordered, it's ordered at how much is this going to cost? Can we get it cheaper? Where do we get it from? And then the next place that it goes to, it goes into the kitchen. There is a race to get it prepped that I understand well. And then there is a race to get the ticket time out to the table. And then so that creates this anxious consciousness that's going on in the kitchen. So you have chefs that are hierarchy. There's a hierarchy. There's aggressive behavior. People are running under pressure. Mm-hmm. And there's a lack of joy when you're doing that. So how do you do that and remove that level of pressure? I mean, we still have the pressure in Pinewood because we get rocking in there.
Yeah.
But I always make sure that my team knows, slow it down, take your time, finish it right, relax, get off the line. Don't, you know, no one is talking to each other in a negative way. I mean, that's a huge piece for me. I don't have any bullies in my kitchen, and I won't. And I've had fantastic chefs come through the door to work with me, probably way better than me. But they were assholes.
Yeah.
And I was like, homie, you can't be here. It's like, and if it's, we have a saying now in the kitchen, if you can't grow, you got to go.
Oh, I love that. If you can't grow, you got to go. Well, I do think you're inspiring a movement, so much so you guys have now opened up Pinewood Mercantile, which you sell a lot of the jams, the pickles. What else do you guys sell in there?
We sell the soup. So I make all these microbiome soups because my whole thing is based in the biome and how the biome changes everything. So which bacterias feed and create which short chain fatty acids that then fight inflammation. So if you're eating for those bacterias, you're building that colony of gut homies, I call them, then your body is in balance. So I make these microbiome soups, and everything I do in the restaurant, you know, I really try to do super Southern, but then I just mess with the ingredients ingredients, or I create a platter like the Southerner, which is, yes, it's fried chicken, it's gluten-free and rice bran oil, but I make sure there's collard greens with apple cider vinegar, and then the collards feed a certain gut homie, and then the slaw is made with carrots and what the carrot does in the gut. So I'm looking at Southern recipes and I'm playing with them so they support everyone's gut wellness. And the Mercantile now sells everything. We do an elderberry barbecue sauce. We do an umeboshi ketchup. So the umeboshi ketchup is a Japanese vinegar that does not feed yeast and candida. And it also fights acid indigestion, and it works as a digestive enzyme.
Oh my gosh. This, I'm like drooling over here.
It's so good, right?
So good.
And it's ketchup. And people are like, that's the best ketchup I ever had. I'm like, dip it again, girl. Dip it again.
Well, did you ever have any resistance? Because Pinewood is a tiny town. And I mean, I think that part of this movement too now is that you have this whole investment group. You guys call yourself Pinewood Eats. And you're wanting to continue to inspire others to connect to real food. But like, did people in Pinewood really get what that was all about at first?
Oh, no. It was really brutal.
Yeah.
What I didn't write about in the book was the pushback.
Yeah.
And was the resistance. And was, hey, you know, I had taken this restaurant, this store that had, it's just a general store, and then that had been there since the 1920s. And it had been, it's always been, you know, a fixture in the community. And I changed it, and I changed the food. And yes, I built up the community because now I employ everybody out there. And the more burgers we sell, the more cowboys, the more potatoes we sell, the more people on the farm, the more canned goods I sell, the more people work in my canning kitchen that I run. So I was raising them up, but in the middle, before I could raise them up, all that people could see was the change I was bringing, and it was frightening.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of resistance and there was a lot of hate, and I learned a great lesson. You know, if you want someone to have grace, you have to be the grace.
Mm.
And so I just have had to really, again, always take things back to myself and how can I make the situation better by being better. Wow. Instead of being mad at them, how can I be better?
Yeah.
I ask my kids that now. When things go down with them, I go, girl, what was your part in it?
Yeah.
Because we have a part in
always.
Everything.
Mm-hmm.
We have a part in everything. And, you know, we feed everybody in Pinewood, whether they have money to pay or not. There's a huge sign. And we feed everyone because being a hungry kid, I can't imagine growing all the food that we grow there. And serving the type of food that we serve, which doesn't even exist in Nashville, because it's really right there from the farm, and it's food allergy friendly. I can't imagine having access to so much food and not being generous with it.
Mm.
So we feed everybody. I mean, and I think now people are proud of us there. They're very
right.
proud. And now we brought in these swanky partners. So.
Yes, one of which is Dirk Spentley, who's a client of mine. And I know he has spoken so wonderfully about Pinewood for years now. But like, I think that it's funny because Dirk's and I will go on these not fad diets, but we're always kind of looking into what to do for our bodies and all that stuff. So we accept like organic food can be amazing, you know, but that was kind of the thing that I just did not understand if a Pinewood small town culture would think that way, because we're, you know, I feel like a lot of people who have lived a certain way for a certain amount of time, they're just kind of set in their ways and don't want to really look outside of the box on that stuff.
Yeah, I think what has happened there, one of the big things is when we opened, I should have been wondering who would come,
mm-hmm.
but instead I was just trying to stay alive physically with keeping up with the pace of it. But what has happened is Pinewood, because it's such an approachable place, because it's so comfortable in there, that people now drive for hours to eat there because they know, we all know. We used to think it was only on the coast or in the big cities that people wanted to eat well. But what I know now more than anybody else, because of what I do in Pinewood, is people everywhere want to feel well, they want to eat better, and they want to make changes. But there are very few places for them to go to experience different approaches to cooking and food that are familiar. So I have the burger and the hand-cut fries, and I have the fried chicken, but then I'll have one of the microbiome soups, or I'll have something from the farm that they maybe won't try anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
but it's a comfortable enough setting that they're like, oh, I want to, let me chase that. Let me get a bite of that.
Yeah. And they're more open. Well, I want to talk a little bit. We were talking before about just how I think the science behind all of this is so fascinating. And I know for a lot of people, because it felt this way to me when I first started learning about how food can heal your body, it just feels overwhelming because there's so much to learn. There's so much that I feel like we've been misled to believe as far as, you know, diets or what's actually good for our bodies. So can you give some of the basics? Let's talk about maybe the basics of like gut health and why that's so important.
Yeah, I think the first thing that happened to us is we started to use the word healthy food, and we view healthy food as punishment for when we've gone off the rails. Mm. So we'll look at food like a kale salad. And, you know, actually, I think kale can be delicious, but I think it needs to be cooked or it needs to be finely, finely chopped and then massaged to make a great salad. So, and there's a whole process to that. So we really view things like healthy food or good for us food as punishment that we've done something wrong. So the first layer for me about food and healing our body with food is our own judgments and paying attention to what are we eating and mindfulness. So I always say to people, first, I want you to pay attention to what you're eating. Just spend the week. And, you know, did you eat a lot of dried crunchy? Do you eat a lot of cheese? Do you have a lot of milk? Do you have a lot of meat? Do you have a lot of kale? Because you can create an excess and imbalance in the gut with too much certain vegetables, 100%. Mm. So basically gut health is made up. We have all of these bacterias, good, bad, and some are good in some people and bad in other people. And what I love is in the beginning of my journey, when I said macrobiotics was too rigid or too narrow for me, is I am not a fundamentalist. I believe we are all individuals and we all have to find our own yellow brick road to health via food. And the microbiome right now is proof in that. And it has me super duper excited because some people can be vegan and they do really well, and they can be keto and they do well, or they could be paleo, but somebody else doesn't. Right. And now we understand why, because in the gut, we have all this different bacteria, and the purpose of the bacteria is to break down the food so that the food can then go to work in the body. The nutritional value in the food can work in the body. Most of us have an imbalance, a dysbiosis of bacteria in the gut, in the intestines, at some place in the intestines, some in the small intestine, some at the top of the small intestine, some in the colon, the bottom of the colon. It just depends. So eating for the bacteria, the gut homies, because they're like the ride or dies, and we don't want them to die. We want them to multiply like Bebe's kids. Do you remember that cartoon? Oh my God. So we want them to multiply like Bebe's kids. And so how they do that is by being fed plant foods. So one of the things about veganism and why veganism works, and I'm not a vegan, I'm a cattle rancher, I'm an open-minded eater, and I'm not that vegans aren't open-minded, they are wonderful, and I was vegan for 7 years, and I do eat predominantly plant-based. Mm-hmm. But one of the reasons that works so well, and it does work, is because you're feeding the gut all these, a variety of different plants, and each bacteria eats a different plant. So for example, Akkermangia, which is located in the mucosal lining of the small intestine, and it works as it's a major anti-inflammatory bacteria, and it's a very small colony. It loves pomegranate and it loves whole cranberry. But how many and if you have weak digestion, you're not going to eat pomegranate seeds because that's going to irritate the lining. So whole cranberries are frozen in a smoothie, excellent. So knowing the bacteria and knowing the balance of what that bacteria eats and what is your bacteria load is key. So there is a test called Viome that I'm a super fan of, and I don't work with them.
Can you spell that? Because I was literally about to say, well, how do we find out these bacteria? So
V-I-O-M-E, okay. Viome. And it's a company, and I love this company because I've been using their test myself every 90 days. It's key to staying well for me. I've watched a lot of people that I go, girl, you need to get the Viome test, and then they email it to me. but they don't. So what happens is in the Viome test, they check all the bacteria that they can, okay, and you get a breakdown, a very simple breakdown. And the breakdown says, you know, these are the foods you need to eat. These are your superfoods because you need to eat these to fuel this particular bacteria. One of the most common superfoods for everybody is arugula. usually, unless you have an abundance of arugula, then you may have to cut it back. So then those are the foods, the superfoods you want to feed those, the super duper gut homies. And then there are the foods that you want to have in that are good for you. And you get that list that you want to start adding in. And then you get the minimized food list, which is all individual again, right? Because whatever your excess is, might be someone's, they don't have it. They have, you know what I mean? So you're going to get a list of what you need to minimize. So say you've been eating a lot of broccoli and cauliflower and cabbage and Brussels sprouts because you read that's good for you, or kale. And so you go on a kale kick and all you eat is kale. Poor kale. I've given it 2 shout outs. Don't be mad at me. But or just whatever. Or you're just like an onionaholic, which I am. These feed different bacterias, and you can create an excess of those bacterias. So it'll say minimize this, and then you're going to have the avoid, and that's because the bacteria that feeds off of that particular food is already out of control. Okay. And it could be causing problems for you. So that's why I love the Viome test, because it's the individual yellow brick road to wellness. It's like, this is to me the future of individualized medicine. And this is the end of fad diets, which makes me really happy, because listen, your microbiome changes with every meal. And in 90 days, you can completely reset your gut.
So if it changes with every meal, how do you consistently keep your gut in balance?
I'm really mindful of what I eat. So like I was just thinking today I'm a craver and I get kicked I get on these things like snap peas right now. That's like my jam. I'm like in the fridge, I have a bag of snap peas and I'm like snacking on them. And then I'll go, okay, lay off the snap peas. Or I've put onion in everything for 2 weeks straight. Cut that onion back. Or it's really not about what to cut out of your diet as much as it is about what to add in. Yeah. Because diet is about loss, right? So if we, and then that's always sad to us because it's loss.
Right.
So instead of thinking about what I shouldn't eat, I always think about what I haven't been eating. And that goes back to raising cattle the way we do, which is grass-fed, grass-finished, mob grazing. And in mob grazing, you always, when there is a situation with any livestock, you always have to look at what have they been eating? What is their nutritional profile, right? Mm-hmm. So each pasture on the farm, we move our cattle right now, which is the beginning of the high season, 3 times a day. And we move them to each pasture where you might look at it and think, oh, it's just the same grass, but it's not the same grass. Mm-hmm. It has a different amount of water, a different amount of sunshine. It has a different periods of the day where it gets more sunshine than another pasture. And it's a different it's a different type of grass that we're growing in each pasture. And this is how you create wellness and balance in organic livestock. Well, when I got sick, this all went to my own mind. I was like, well, wait a minute. I need to be grazing better. I need to graze from a big old variety of foods. And that's how you stay well.
Right. So that's what's so interesting about even the mentality of a diet. Or I was just thinking when you were talking, like, everyone, you know, with gut health, the big conversation is usually, oh, we'll just get on a probiotic. But like, how would one probiotic actually work for multiple types of people? Because we're all so different internally.
It, first of all, it doesn't anymore. And they know that. And not, I mean, I'm not against probiotics at all. Like I say, take it, do you. But for me, I did not ever take probiotics. I healed that ulceration with fermented foods and eating a variety of foods to feed it. So you've got prebiotic foods and the probiotic. And the gut bacteria that's the gut homie is the probiotic. And then it lives off of this variety of prebiotic food. So the other thing that people do is they'll go ahead and they'll take a probiotic, but they're not feeding even those bacterias. Right. So you have to live a really big point of view. You got to have a big life outlook at what you're eating.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit too about gut issues and emotional health, because you talk a lot about this in your book. And I thought that was so fascinating how the two are actually linked. Can you kind of explain that?
Yeah. So gut health, first of all, serotonin is created in the gut. Your vagus nerve, which is the main nerve that connects the gut and the brain, bacteria travels through that nerve. the whole way that we're looking at depression, even schizophrenia right now, and the scientists are studying this big time, mood disorders, all of the things that we, and anxiety. I mean, anxiety is huge. And I can tell, before I knew this level of science and had really dove into that, I could tell you that when my inflammation in my intestines comes back, which it is a dance. You said earlier, how do I live? I take care of myself.
Yeah.
Like when I've been working, I just finished a 2-week work grind. And these 3 days, today's Wednesday, right? I'm just kind of struggling because I get this extreme fatigue in my body because I have Hashimoto's, rheumatoid arthritis, technically Crohn's disease, celiac, and psoriasis.
Wow.
So I live this dance of like, did I sleep? Did I drink too much wine? Did I, how did I throw myself off? And am I just plain exhausted? So I can tell when my gut goes down and I don't feel well, or I feel a stomach ache, or I feel sort of bloated, my mind goes down. And if I get glutened, I'm like an emotional wreck 2 days after.
Same.
I
feel that too. Yes.
It's just the way that it works for me, you know? I mean, if I don't feel well, my mind isn't well.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole gut-brain science and the connection, this is just the beginning. I mean, we are really going into uncharted territories that, again, are liberating, you know, because there are all kinds of really fantastic studies that are now studying depression and people with manic depression and bipolar, and they're studying their gut microbiomes and their bacteria. And they're finding that a lot of people, the majority in these studies, have imbalances in their microbiome, and they have high levels of particular bacteria in common. And when they bring that bacteria back into balance, their emotional wellness comes into balance. There was a wonderful study done that showed the families that have inherited depression, genetically, inherited depression. And they're finding that maybe what's inherited is the microbiome.
Wow.
And which is, again, why I get so excited is it's liberating,
right?
Because right now we're living in a time where it's what can we do for ourselves is finally on the table. Like, how do I become a better person emotionally and physically? And what is my part in this? How do I do it? How? And now there's all kinds of science to back up the how.
Yeah, I'm just glad the conversation is moving so rapidly, because it's frustrated me for years that we don't, or I haven't felt like our society connects how sick we are with what we're putting in our bodies and what we're putting in our food and all of these things that we do on the daily, we just don't even think about, you know, it's just like this thing that we do and we're not conscious of how that actually affects the way that our system works.
Yeah. I mean, and we've only been eating from a gluttonous sort of pleasure place for a very short period of time in history. The majority of people on this planet didn't have access to food the way that we do in the last 50 years. So food is changing, but it's empowering to me. You know,
I agree.
I have two girls, and my daughters have watched me find my way back to wellness and remain in wellness. You know, once you get well, you got to stay there.
Right.
And so they watch the dance, and I just know that, you know, God forbid if anything happens to me, like happened to my mother, they've witnessed a great mirror.
Yeah.
In how to take care of themselves.
Yeah. What would be, I mean, cause you break down all of this in the book. The book is called My Pinewood Kitchen. If you guys are interested in finding out more details about the bacteria we're talking about and the different ways, the different foods that can heal and balance your system. But is there one thing that you could say that people could do, or they can make a change, or are our bodies just too diverse to put it in one?
No, thing? Yeah. I mean, you can easily make a change. You can start to get to know your body.
Okay.
I think first one, pay attention. What are you eating? Like, without judgment, because we're so judged. We're so judgy of ourselves in our food.
Mm-hmm.
We're so critical of what we're eating and what we're feeding ourselves and what we're feeding our kids and what did we have yesterday. So one, what did you eat? What is your excess? Then identify it. Then start paying attention to how you feel after you eat certain things. Your body is there to talk to you. It's a living being, you know, we're just inside of this living being. So, and then the next thing is, you know, pay attention to the main things that you're eating and how you feel. So a lot of people and a lot of chefs and a lot of restaurateurs go, oh, these people are on this gluten kick and they're getting off of it and it's a fad. And my thing is, no, people just want to feel better. So yes. If they're starting with gluten, great. I'm celiac, but if you want to come into my restaurant and you want to order gluten-free, power to you, because I'm trying to support you to figure out why you don't feel bad.
Yeah.
You know, do I think gluten-free is for everybody? Absolutely not. Do I think dairy-free is for everybody? No, I think you get to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And if you can digest, you know, that you can. But the best thing that you can do is you can add more plants to your diet. Mm-hmm. And if you have weak digestion, cook them. I don't necessarily think that eating raw vegetables all day is good for anyone. I think that warm cooked foods are great. I think that smoothies are a great place to start. If you want to bring your kids on board, but yeah. I don't even think about kids. I think about you. I think about just do you and start to form a relationship with what you're eating and mindful with it. And the more plants you can fold into your gut, literally,
yeah.
The better the gut is going to be. And then, you know, your sugar, I mean, cause sugar wears us out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, again, it goes back to the first place to start is mindful. And then once you get that mindfulness, I almost feel like all these opportunities for you to discover a path to your own wellness are going to open up for you.
Yeah, I love that. I'm going to link the description. I'm going to link the book, My Pinewood Kitchen, in the description of this podcast. I can't wait to start cooking the recipes. We had a tomato soup frenzy at this house the other night. Like, everyone was fighting over the last bowl. It's so good. And I saw that it's a recipe in the book. So I'm so excited.
Yeah. Oh, good. You had the tomato soup. And
yes.
What else did you eat? I don't even remember what like,
we had wings. We had fried chicken. We had, what did we have? Some coleslaw, baked beans. I mean, it was so good. Potato salad, a full Southern meal. It was amazing.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
Yes.
Yay.
You guys delivered on a Friday. So what, with this coronavirus stuff happening, what does that look like for your Pinewood business?
We are so blessed. I thought when the coronavirus hit that I was going to have to close because I rely on people coming an hour each way.
Right.
And I thought, okay, we have to close. And we closed for a weekend. And then I thought, okay, we can stay open. So I'm partners with one of my other partners in Pinewood, Ryan Chapman. We're also partners in another business called Integrative Life Center on Music Row.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an eating disorder, depression, and chemical dependency program. That's a whole person program. And so I do the food service for ILC, and that really saved us. And then the next thing that happened is I run a canning kitchen, and my goal was just to not let the 20 people that work for us on the farm and in the restaurant be out of work.
Right.
I mean, I just was like, how do I keep these people employed? And so between running a full-time canning business and then the Integrative Life Center, and then we opened up for pickup and takeout, and now we deliver in Nashville Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Franklin, Brentwood, Fairview, all over the city. And now it's changing again that we're doing these farm boxes and these beautiful boxes of produce and beef and pork and eggs and cake and chicken and biscuits and jam. And so what's happening is Pinewood is really finding its way into Nashville and the greater Nashville area. And I haven't had to lay one person off. In fact, my kitchen is now running 7 days a week, and I'm desperately in need to find more cooks and more help.
Oh my God. That's amazing. Especially right now.
I mean, it's everything. And I think it's that I love the energy that you put out is the energy you get back 100%.
Yeah, I agree. Where can people, you talked about the Pinewood boxes, where could they find that kind of stuff?
They can go to Pinewood Kitchen and Mercantile.com, and it says pick up. There's a little button right in the center, and you click on that, and that takes you to our online program. And as you scroll through, you'll see the food that can be delivered to you. And as you scroll down, it says from the Mercantile, and everything that I'm growing can go into that box. Zucchini, tomatoes, I'm waiting. We haven't robbed our hives yet, but soon we'll rob our hives and I'll have honey.
Wow.
All the things that we do in Pinewood, because we're a full functioning farm.
Yeah.
Mushrooms, produce, beef, pork, everything can go in the box. And now we're baking our own bread. And so we're adding it all in.
Yum. I tell you guys, like, seriously, it was one of the best meals I've had in a long time. Plus, we got a box, so it's kind of the full experience. It's just fun right now to spice things up. I know I'm getting tired of, like, having to figure out what to cook. So it was super nice to just have all these new ideas come right to our doorstep.
Yay.
Yes.
It's exciting. Yeah, so we're rolling. I mean, we've stayed super insulated. The other thing that we've done in Pinewood is my team is small, and so to keep them out of grocery stores, we feed them.
Yeah.
So no one is, if you're working with us in Pinewood, you're not shopping in grocery stores.
That's eating from
the restaurant and the farm. And it's, you know, it's community. I think Pinewood is what things used to be, and I hope it's what we go back to. Where what that store probably was in the 1920s, it was the hub where you got everything, and everyone is living off of that store, and there's a connectedness to that. And now we've opened up our outdoor seating with umbrellas and social distance tables, and my whole team wears gloves and masks because I am high risk, and so are a couple other people that work with me. So we're just moving in this new world together.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to come visit when it opens back up in person. Where can people find you in the meantime, other than the website? Do you have social media sites?
Oh, yes. I social media.
Tell us everywhere.
Three pages on Facebook. I'm all over that place. I've got Me McCormick, and then on Instagram, three E's, M-E-E-E McCormick, and then Pinewood Kitchen and Mercantile on Instagram, and then just Me McCormick on Facebook, and then Pinewood Kitchen and Mercantile on Facebook, and then Me Tracy McCormick on Facebook. I feel like I'm just like...
It. You just took over Facebook.
You know what is so interesting about Facebook? Don't sleep on it. I built a really big platform over there in the last few years, and everybody kind of left Facebook. But can I tell you, Facebook is coming back.
Really?
Oh my gosh, it's huge because everyone is on there. So all of the, I mean, I've always said don't sleep on Facebook because the audience there is a different, maybe different type of audience than Instagram. But they're super active right now. And I like that because I like that people have a place to connect.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get back on the Facebook game. I've kind of slacked.
Girl, don't slack. Don't sleep, girl.
Well, Mi, I thank you so much for doing this. It's so nice to finally talk to you. We have so many connections, so it's so great that I can actually connect with you. I'm really excited about this.
I love talking to you, too, and I love being able to share the goodness of Pinewood.
Yes, you guys check out My Pinewood Kitchen. It's sold everywhere online right now. And get a Pinewood box. Do it. I highly recommend it. Thanks, Mi, for being here, and thank you guys for listening. This is Kelly Henderson, and you've been listening to the Velvet's Edge podcast. I truly believe that every one of us has a little velvet and a little edge, so it's so important to remember that to be strong, you must be soft too. Thank you so much for sharing in those stories with me. You can follow Velvet's Edge on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as velvetsedge.com. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me every Wednesday for more conversations on lifestyle, beauty, and relationships. Thanks for listening.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.